So I'm just going to warn you today that there is an elephant in the room. Some of you are going to start looking around for the... No, that's like a saying. And I'm going to address it at some point. We're going to get to the elephant, right? From South Africa, you're very excited, right? We're going on safari. I'm going to get there. You're going to understand what it is. If you don't, you'll feel really inadequate, which is also... By the way, that's the main reason when you give a class, that's what rabbis are trying to do, make everybody feel inadequate. So if you don't get it, so that's also important. So let's begin. In the first source, Perek Kaf Gimel, Pasuk Yud, Ki Tetzei Machane Al Aivecha. How do you want to translate this? Ki Tetzei Machane Al Aivecha. So this means is that you're going to war. Aivecha, there's an enemy there. And there's going to be a camp. The camp is the encampment prior to the war. And remember, war in the old days is not, you know, like war today. In the old days, it was hand-to-hand battle. It's, you know, there's a battlefield. You go out to war, but before the battlefield, you will have your encampment not so far from the battlefield. So, ki teitzei machane aleivecha, v'nishmarta mikol davar ra. And guard yourself from everything which is bad. Now, I'm going to pause here for a second. But before I do that, I'm going to tell you that that's a bad thing to do. The reason it's a bad thing to do is because the Torah has its natural breaks. And this is not a natural break. This is the middle of a conversation or middle of a section. So therefore, the truth is we should interpret this in terms of its whole section. But commentaries don't always do that. Sometimes commentaries will stop and give an interpretation right over here. Now, this in a sense is going to be a what we can call, and we're just making these things up, this is going to be like a spiritual Rorschach. Everything looks like a butterfly. Yes. And you're supposed to say, oh, that's interesting. There's perhaps an apocryphal story of a Breslover chassid who was brought down to the Lashkat HaGiyus here in Yerushalayim, and they... There was a young woman, a katsina, an officer, who interviewed and gave him the psychological evaluation. And she shows him the first one and says, what do you see? So he looks and he says, I see the Shechina. I see God's presence. She shows him the second one, what do you see? She says, I see the Shechina. She goes, Shows him the third one, what do you see? He says, I see the Shechina. So he says, do you see the Shechina in everything you look at? He goes, most things. He goes, when you look at me, what do you see? So he says, the Sitra Achra. For those of you who don't know, the forces of evil. Needless to say, he got out. So, let's try this again. What exactly does it mean when it says Davara? So therefore, you have to just tell me in your mind what is ra. I mean, what do you think is bad? Whatever you think is bad is going to end up being your definition of what ra is. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. So in this sense, really, I guess the question is, what is it that we should do? Meaning, so what exactly does ra mean? So we have a couple of commentaries, and let's start first with source number 2, which is the Midrash. And by the way, if you don't notice it at this point, we make it. You know what? Before we do source number 2, let's just read the rest of the verses, because that will be a little bit more fair. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ki yebecha ish asher lo yeh tahor. That itself is a great phrase. If there'll be a person, asher lo yeh tahor. Yes? Do you notice anything about this? The previous verse said ra, bad, right? Right? We once had a tree, we said bereshit. So it's interesting. Lo yeh tahor. So some of us will say, oh, look how hard the Torah is working not to say a bad word, even though we just had a bad word before. Ki yebecha ish asher lo yeh tahor, a person who will not be pure. Mikra laila, which means nocturnal emission. V'yatzal michutz l'machane, and I notice the same word is used again, the camp. The camp is the continuation over here. V'yatzal michutz l'machane, and he's going to leave the camp. Lo yavol tocha machane, do not come into the camp. So therefore you had kitetze machane, right? V'yatzal michutz l'machane, al yavol tocha machane. So the main issue really seems to be matters of machane, matters of encampment. V'yalefnot erev yurchatz b'mayim. By the way, here's one of the sources for mikvah, that is when evening comes, the person should wash themselves with water or immerse in water. Ukavo Hashemesh yavo el toch ha-machaneh. And as the sun sets, the person can then come back to the machaneh. So once again, we see the main point over here is the machaneh. Now, again, it speaks about going outside of the camp. Going into details about how one goes to the bathroom, which is like you're saying, we really just now got down to you know, talk about, you know, bodily things, you know, certain things we didn't have to go into such detail, and that's what's really strange. But then it gives us a reason. Because God is in your camp. And your camp has to be holy. And one should not see any ervat davar. What does ervat davar mean? And he shouldn't see ervat davar. What does ervat davar mean? Ervat davar, generally, the word erva means either sexual or nakedness, which those of you who are young and don't know, there is a correlation. I was stopping right there. But it depends on to what extent erva, but it leans in that direction. It's nakedness leading towards sexuality. So, now let's look at source number two. This is a midrash, midrash tanaim. It's an old midrash. You're going to go to war. So first of all, it's interesting because I would not have known that from reading it. It says, excuse me? No, but it speaks about oivecha. Ki teitzei machaneh al oivecha. So the oivecha is the issue. By the way, the oivecha, your enemy, is the reason that it believes it. It's what's called, there's two types of wars. There's wars which are essentially wars which are done for economic reasons, and ones which are done because the other side is actually an enemy. The fact that it called them oivecha, now I could have said, if I'm going to war, they are now by definition the enemy. That's the reason why it sort of leaned in this direction to determine that this is talking about a war which is a war of chova, obligation. Which types of wars are obligation? The wars against the seven nations which occupied Israel, Amalek, people who come to attack us, so defensive wars. So it is interesting that the Midrash made this decision, because you know what? What's the name of this week's parsha? Ki Teitze, right? Ki Teitze leMilchama, right? It's also, we have, what phrase was used in the very beginning of the parsha? Ki Teitze leMilchama. What? Alevecha. And over there, they insist that it's a milchemet reshut. So therefore, everything I've said in the last minute, even though I liked it, is not necessarily correct. Did anybody realize you don't realize the elephant yet. Okay, we'll keep on going. Read the next line now. You're going to go to war against your enemy. Therefore, it's a milchemet chova. Okay. So continue. Omar of Yosef of Chanina, Katuv kitetzi molchama olevecha, v'nishmar t'me kol devar ra, v'm einu yotze, einu nishmar, ela mikan, she'en ha-satan mekatreg, ela bishat sakana. That is very interesting. Rashi will tell us this. We'll see this larger in context in the Rishalmi, that you know when things are dangerous, what's the answer? When things are dangerous. When you get into dangerous situations, should I give you a bad example? Rina's looking like I'm crazy. Should I give you a bad example? When somebody is sick and they go to the hospital, right? The most dangerous place for your health is a hospital. Right? Beit Cholim, right? A hospital is a really dangerous place. It's no place for a sick person. Because you can get really, really sick there because there's so many diseases over there, so many things you can catch. And, okay, I'm just going to stop there for a second, but that's on a practical level. This is not talking about a practical level. It's talking on a religious level. It's as if to say that if you go out on a cliff and you're leaning, you know, between firm ground, terra firma, and you're leaning between an abyss, you're in a very dangerous situation. But not just on a practical level, but also on a spiritual level. I want to read that line again. It says, "Mikan she'ena Satan mikatreg el bishat sakana." It's as if up in heaven, the Satan turns to God and says, "Look how close we are. We have an opportunity over here. A little nudge can help this person over the edge, or the other way around. The person could slip on the edge, and the Satan says to God, you don't have to do something extraordinary to pull them back in." Which means, again, and we don't know which way it goes, but the Satan is there with, you know, all of its arguments, turning in front of the heavenly court and saying, we have a good opportunity right now. So that's what it just said. Therefore, when you go out to war, which is a dangerous situation, make sure that you up your game, make sure that you're acting in a really extraordinarily good way, because you're in a spiritually precarious situation and there's danger about. That is what this midrash just now said to us. V'nishmarti mikol devara, im bikashta lishtamer mikol devara, if you really want to guide yourselves from things which are, remember I told you there's a Rorschach test? Here we go. If you really want to guard yourself from things which are bad, al tistakeh b'isha na'eh. Don't go looking at beautiful women. Nah.
Look at the cards instead.
So, I can't look up anymore today after having read that. V'yafila p'nuya. Even women who are single. Be'eshet ish. V'yafilu michu'ara. And if she's married, don't even look at an ugly one. Sorry. Don't even look at her clothing. So, by the way, this colored clothes, the shoes. Don't look at her shoes. You know what? I could admit that I've bought many clothing for my wife over the years. I traveled to America. I'd buy things. The worst case was that I saw a jacket that I wanted to buy for her. So I start looking at all the saleswomen, and I said, "Can you try this on for me?" And it was it a perfect fit? So she was really upset that I was able to do that. Shoes, I never bought her. I would never, no, shoes, I don't even understand it. You know, there's a chacham and a rasha and a tam, I'm not even the, and if we go shopping for shoes, what do you think? I what am I supposed to, just tell me what I'm supposed to think. Give me a hint. I have no idea.
Ari, I have a better story than that.
I don't want to hear it. No. So, again, this was real interesting because he took this straight into the realm of sexuality. Why did he do this? All of my fellow biblical exegetes in the room.
Ra.
No, it's better than Ra. Why? What took him in this direction? And by the way, any of you figure out the elephant yet or no? Because at the very end of the section, Irvat Davar. Mi Davar Ra, Irvat Davar. Davar Ra, Irvat Davar. Should I keep on doing that? Mikol davar ra. What's the best way to figure out a definition of something? The best way to figure out a definition of something is to look how it's used generally in the Torah, but if you can figure out how it's used in that particular section, so all the better. So over here, we have one paragraph, and that's the way it's written in the Torah. The beginning of the paragraph has guard itself mi davar ra. We need a definition. How do you figure out a definition? Look at context. In the context, what do I see? Ervat davar. So therefore, the sensibility over here took us to this place. There's a similar thing. It must be speaking about erva. And therefore, stay away from things which are of sexual nature, which, by the way, may not have been what we would call pshat, but it's not that bad either. Yeah.
I keep thinking of...
And again, when you go out, when she left the camp, she was in a precarious situation, and that led to the Ervat Davar, and so on and so forth. It's a very good comparison. If you're nice and you remind me, I'll send you something I just wrote on Vayishlach Andina on that whole story. Coming back, and by the way, if you didn't even ask, I told you I worked on different books. So one of them was I rewrote my first book. I rewrote just Bereshit from the first book from Explorations. So the last thing that I worked on was Parshat Vayishlach, where I dealt with, it wasn't Vayishlach, it was the one before, was the second last thing that I did, when Vayetze, is where I dealt with, even though it's in Vayishlach and Vayetze, I dealt with it. So let's come back. Anybody realize the problem yet? Or the elephant? You're all... Do you remember that I keep giving you hints, which is why I really feel bad. Do you remember that there was another Ki Tetzeh in this week's parsha called Ki Tetzeh? And it says, Ki Tetzeh Melacham Levecha V'ra'ita Eishet Yifat Toar V'chashakteba V'lakachtecha Le'isha, and have sex in the field and bring her, drag her by the hair and take her home. Do you realize what we just now read? Create a holy machaneh. And what are we told? How do we create a holy machaneh? Don't look at attractive women. One second. Don't look at attractive women and over there drag her by the hair and take her home. I mean, one second. There's something over here that, and by the way, did you notice the real easy way out? Oh, that's a Mohammed Rishut, and this is a Mohammed Chovah. So there it's morally okay, and over here it's morally problematic. Do you all love that answer? Don't be such a fascist. It's no, but even there, according to the Rambam, you try to make peace, and you're allowed to make peace. But let's leave that on the side. I'm not dealing with the practical side of this. I'm dealing with the philosophical side of this. How is it possible that in the same parsha we have two parshiot that both start with Ki Tetzeh, and one of them speaks about behavior, which again, maybe for some of you it's your favorite parsha. I don't know. I think. Okay, but even it's really interesting saying v'nishmar to be called devara, and therefore what interpretation? Don't look at single women. Don't look at married women. The single women, even if they're attractive, the married women, even if they're ugly, don't look at them. Don't.
Controls are loosened because you're now killing.
Good, 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 good. So let's. We'll see inside. We'll see. It's completely psychological interpretation, which we'll see how many of the Rishonim and the Achronim say. In terms of that, once there's a breakdown of morals, so then there's a complete breakdown of morals.
Which is the Satan.
Okay, so let's try to make some progress over here, or more progress, towards the bottom in that same second source. So, Nishmartim kol devara, shelo yeharher adam bayom, v'yavoli de tuma balayla. So you remember the first verse to the second verse. The first verse is talking about Mishmarta kol devar, guard yourself from bad things. And the second verse spoke about somebody having a nocturnal admission. So he's saying, yeah, you know why that happens? What were you thinking about all day? Or what were you looking at all day? Or what was your mind occupied with? And why do you think that there was not this kind of response? Which means the sensibility of this Midrash Tanaim, first of all, I apologize, but I don't really apologize. It took the whole thing within the sexual realm. When I asked you before, so what's bad? So the Freudians here will be very happy because it takes this into this realm of sexuality. What are you thinking about? What are you looking at? Guard those things. And by the way, what is the opposite when you end up guarding yourself in that area? Creating holiness, then, which is what it said. But again, I have to ask myself, so what happens with the Eshet Kipat Torah? And I've said this many times, that I strongly suspect that even those who don't like the Torah, if they find out this halacha, Israel's going to declare war in Sweden immediately. And okay, I'll explain to some of you afterwards. So let's continue. Source number three in the Midrash, Tanchuma, it takes it in the exact opposite direction. And it says, Ki tetzeh machan avechem nishmartim kol devarash, lo yevechem shum leitzanut. But by the way, I just imagine over here different rabbis getting up and talking to their classes and telling them that this is what your problem is, right? One in this direction, leitzanut. Leitzanut is great. What does leitzanut mean? Shelo tovo lidei chiyuv. By the way, the rest of this source, which I'm not going to read inside, takes it completely out of any realm of war. And it takes into the realm of what's bad, Avodah Zarah is bad. What's the machaneh? The machaneh is the Jewish community. What's outside is galut. You want to end up going into galut? Do these kinds of things. And it's interesting because it is completely separated from what the pshat over here is. No war, no enemy. The enemy is the Yetzer Hara. We're talking about following idolatry. That's what's bad. Again, what's bad? First source, bad is sexuality. Second source, what's bad? Idolatry. So, And we can keep on doing this because various commentaries are going to tell us different definitions what is bad, each one coming from their own perspective. Rashi, source number 4, Ki Teitzev Neshmarti Shesatan Mekatreg Bishat Sakana, which we already saw. Rashi actually takes it at least, and I have to be very careful here, at least according to the parentheses in the Rashi that I have in front of me. I'm pretty sure that these sources and parentheses in Rashi were put in much, much later, and whoever put them in did not necessarily tell us what Rashi used, but tells us what they found. So over here is a much longer source. The reason I brought it here is, again, more so for you to look at later if you want to, but I will tell you where it's from. It's from a Mishnah that we read on Friday nights, which is in the second chapter of Shabbat, which is the parsha of B'meh Madlikim, or B'meh Madlikin, what oils one can use to light candles, which goes to the Shabbat candles. And over there, the Mishnah says, so the beginning of source 5, which is the Mishnah, and then the Yerushalmi, Mishnah says, Al shalosh avirot nashim metot b'shat leidatan, al she'inun zihirot, because they're not careful. Keep in mind that word zihirot, or careful, b'nida b'chala uvudlakat taner, that women were given specifically three mitzvot. Of the mitzvah of nida is primarily within the realm of the woman to fulfill, chala, separating chala, and lighting candles. By the way, if a man lives by himself, he has to light candles. If a man begs challah, he has to take challah. But these are the mitzvot which were given over to women, which of course you have to ask yourself why that's the case. The end of this Yerushalmi, which we're not going to read, takes it back to the Garden of Eden, takes it back to the sin of Chava, takes it back to death coming into the world, and how death is connected to these three things, and how what her job is to bring life into the world. Which means, as a contra to the death that came in, bring life. And therefore, the candles and the challah and the nida, all of these things are to bring life into the world. And that's really what the conclusion over here is. And therefore, when the source over here says, oh, this brings death, some people look at it, wow, what a disturbing teaching. It's saying, no, they bring death. And therefore, what's our interest in this today? When there's danger, be careful. Which exactly is what it says. Mikan. The Rishalmi then will bring four different possible sources to this idea. One of them will be the source of going out to war, which is our verse, which is why the commentary on Rashi pointed us in this direction. And it's the same kind of idea, that when there's danger, one has to be careful, because when there's danger, things are dangerous, and giving birth is dangerous. Giving birth was probably the most dangerous things that women ever did in antiquity, right? Second most dangerous is getting married, but oh, happy anniversary. Survived another one. I know you can't believe it, but it's actually 33 years, because you're thinking she can't be that old. And then you're thinking probably, is this like one of those Breslov weddings that the bride was only 13 or so? Before 14, they said, before her 14th birthday. And the answer is, maybe. Okay. Continue. Source number 6, the Ibn Ezra. Ki teitze machaneh, zeo machaneh sheyatza al oyev, v'sham ha'aron v'hu machaneh katan. So it's saying that, okay, you have the machaneh, but you have a microcosm. What's the microcosm? The microcosm is, in this camp, you have the aron. The Aron now creates holiness, which means, why do we have to be careful? Because the Aron is there. When they went out to war, they would take the Aron with them. So therefore, the Aron is in the camp. You have holiness. You have to behave in a proper way. You mentioned Rabbi Grossman before. So years ago, I traveled with Rabbi Grossman out to Los Angeles, and somebody there was making a bar mitzvah, and they had one of Rabbi Grossman's students write a Torah. And I got the privilege of carrying the Torah and bringing it out to Los Angeles, to L.A. And first of all, if you're ever going to fly from Israel to America with the Torah, do it with El Al, because they were so respective of the Torah. My Torah went in business, by the way. I didn't, but a great deal of respect. But you know what? The night before we took it, the sofer brought the Torah to my house, and having the Torah in your house is daunting. It's daunting. First of all, where do you put it? Right? I don't know how many of you have. You know, but I'm saying, where do you put it? So, okay. Where do we put it? On the couch, on the dining room table? Where do you put a Sefer Torah? Do you really go to sleep when you have the Sefer Torah downstairs? So I'm saying just having the Torah there is this level of responsibility. So that's what it's saying here. Because the Aaron is with you, that's why, by the way, there's a deeper point to all this. I hope you all understand it. The Aaron is a representative of something. It's a representative of the Shekhinah. And that's exactly what the Pasuk said. That the Shekhinah is in your midst. But isn't it interesting how primitive we are, that it's not until that I speak of it in a concrete way. Oh, when I just said, oh, the Shekhinah is with you. Yeah, okay, the Shekhinah is with us. Oh, there's a Torah with you. That just now became much more serious. But it's really not the case. Because the Shekhinah is in fact, with them. And we'll leave the Ibn Ezra after that comment. Ramban in source number 7. So he cites Rashi as is his wont. And he says, I'll tell you what's proper in my eyes. Is that the Torah is giving us extra warning because there's extra opportunity for sin in this area. And the Ramban says, and we know what happens when soldiers go out to war. They get very, very primitive. By the way, I'm not, and I don't believe the Ramban here is speaking about Jewish soldiers. He's talking about when people go to war, it brings out the primitive within them. They eat kol toeva, yigazlu, v'yichamsu, the people go out to war, all boundaries are broken down. So I think this is what my father alluded to before, that it's not just on a psychological level. It's that, you know, when we're young, we're told, be nice to people. You like, if you find a lost object, return it, and don't say not nice things. And by the way, you know, don't steal and don't kill. And now you're being told, okay, go kill, right? Go kill just causes a total breakdown of somebody's moral base. And when that happens, the Ramban is saying, what is our response? We need to increase our level of being careful, our level of care, in order to make sure that we're not going to do things which are completely immoral or have this total breakdown. Hayashar b'nei adam b'tiv'o yit labesh achzariyut v'chema k'tzeit p'machan el oyev. That even the best of people will end up becoming cruel when they go out to battle. V'alkein hizhir ba'o katuv, and therefore the Torah warns us, u'nishmarta mikol davara, be careful about all things which are bad. V'al derech ha'pshat hi azhara mikol hanesar. And what it's telling you is still in a world which has lost boundaries, make sure you have boundaries. That's what it's saying. One of the most remarkable phone calls I ever received was a phone call in the middle of a war that we were having with Lebanon. And one of the officers, who's today is a very high-ranking officer in Miluim, calls me from Lebanon and he says that we have no supplies. Second Lebanon War, they ran out of supplies. And there is a supermarket which was full of Hezbollah supporters. You can see from all the pictures and whatever. And they've abandoned it and they're full of supplies. We want to take supplies, but the religious soldiers are all arguing with one another whether we're allowed to take it, it's a mitzvah to take it, or whether we should be leaving money behind. So that was his question. Israeli army. I know the BDS will never get this. Should we leave money behind or not when we take some bottles of water from the store in Lebanon? Forget about the answer because it is just so unimportant. It actually really is important and very interesting, but not for today. That's what the Ramban is saying. The Ramban is saying when you're in a world where you're in the middle of a war and all the boundaries are breaking down, you still should be asking all the moral questions over here. Can I take this bottle of water or can I not take this bottle of water? Am I supposed to pay? Am I not supposed to pay? What exactly are the rules over here? And I'm saying that is such, right, you realize why I say that was one of the most memorable calls I ever had as a rabbi, because this goes right down to the core. This is the Ramban. Keep your morals even in a world which just now has gone completely crazy. He continues and he said, and he quotes the Sifri, okay, we just now throw everything else into it. Gili arayot, shvichut amim, avodah zarah, all the normal bad things you just got to. We'll skip a little bit. Ma'aseh shagolu alav kananim esalekat hashchina. Av kol ma'aseh shagolu alav kananim esalekat hashchina. And let me explain what he says. Pay attention, because if you're going to war, especially if it is a war against the seven nations, who are generally called the Canaanites, but there were seven different nations, there's a reason the Canaanites lost the land of Israel. What's the reason they lost the land? Because of their behavior. Their behavior could not be tolerated by the land, and the land of Israel has the Shekhinah. Their behavior caused the Shekhinah to go into exile, and what's the result of that? They go into exile. That is our moral right to be in this land. But we can only be in this land as long as we act in a moral way. So the Ramban is saying, so pay attention now. You're going to go out to war against the Canaanites. What can you not possibly do? The behavior which they did, which caused the Shekhinah to be exiled in the first place. Which means he understands this as not just rules of law. So you saw this two stages. The first stage was the more psychological, saying that the person who goes to war is going to have this complete breakdown in terms of the morals. Don't have boundaries. And the second part was on a more spiritual level, but realize why you need to have boundaries. It was the lack of boundaries which caused the people that you're fighting with to lose the rights to this land. Make sure you don't behave in that way, and make sure, therefore, that you don't lose your rights to the land. At the very end, he writes, "V'och lo yivur leino oivim naseh kemaseh gromim lahem shigalu bifneinu." He's going on the last word, Mikol Davara, Davara from Dibur. And he's saying, on top of the things like sexual sins, murder, idolatry, on top of all that, also Lashon Hara, which is interesting because that does get thrown into the mix as well. But he's saying, why? Because you need to be a unified people. You go to war, you need unity. And you're going to start using your words to insult one another. What's going to happen to the morale of the camp? What's going to happen to the soldiers? And by the way, that's the other thing. One of the things that the Israeli army gets accused for from the religious who protest that we shouldn't be going to the army is that the army is a very big melting pot. And it's true that one of the plans of Ben-Gurion was to make the army a melting pot. And I want to stop now and say a melting pot. But I want to stop now and say that the army is a melting pot, but not in the way that people lose their identity. The army is a melting pot where religious and non-religious soldiers, where, you know, other parts of life, maybe there's tension between different parts of the population. The army, for the most part, is a place where there's absolutely unbelievable unity between people who otherwise would not necessarily have all that much in common. And the way that the army and the soldiers feel this responsibility and this love and dedication to one another is one of the holiest things which ever happens in this. It's part of the miracles of this modern state. The last war that took place in Gaza, the amount of people that were drafted and reported was over 100%. And again, just in case you don't understand how you can have more than 100%, and it's true, there probably were people who were drafted who didn't come, but there were many, many people who were not drafted who came and said, okay, I'm here. You're too old. There's a guy that we know who was wounded and lost a son and didn't have to be there, but he couldn't stay away. And he's older than a number of the people in this room. And he went down there to make sure that no other soldiers fall. He, by the way, he contacted me almost immediately and said, we need this, this, and this, and this. Go find money and bring me money. We raised over 200,000 shekel within 24 hours. And everything on his shopping list, we brought down for the soldiers. Of course, then he told us, why don't you come down and see what's going on? And I'm like, there's a war zone, you lunatic. But we went. We went down to Gaza. We can show you the pictures. We went down to Gaza. And he wanted to show me all the things that we bought. And I'm trying to say, listen, I didn't buy this. I mean, there's some good Jews who want to help. But just watching and seeing the units, and again, the people from all kinds of different backgrounds, and people who went, and it really is something. With the Ramban's point here is, be careful what you say, because we need unity. That is such a strong point, because it is. The Shekhinah is with us. We're a holy army. That's what it's saying. Quick comments on the Ramban, if we're going to look, and I'm going to do this real quickly, 14, 15, and 16, which is all 19th century perspective. 14 is Rav Hirsch, where it's underlined. Uvechein afilu biyotcha b'machanet tzva'isha musarot ha-musar mitrofafot bo b'nakel ve'etzem atarat ha-melchama misayet legasot mishluchot resen gam az v'nushmart mikol davar al techtal milevchon et atzmacha toch kedei shlita atzmit v'shemer mikol davar. So you're probably wondering, what did he say? He said exactly what the Ramban said, but he said it in, Rav Breuer put it in Rav Hirsch's, right? Rav Breuer translated this into Hebrew from the German. This is the German. No, but he put it into beautiful, beautiful Hebrew words. When morality is falling all around you, is the time to stand up, self-control, be decent, be moral, be good, because that's what a holy army is. That's really what Rav Hirsch said. And I can tell you that the Emek Davar, the Netziv, in Source 15, again, different words, but he says the same thing. V'arno otam v'asher ha-kadosh baruch hu shara az b'machane Yisrael. God is in the camp of Israel. V'arehu dumele paltin shel melech, which means an Israeli army. I'm sorry if I keep using it Israeli. I'm sure there are people who are non-Zionists who are going to say, no, a Jewish army. Right? No, an Israeli army, an army of Israelites. God, it's as if you're in a holy place and God, and you're in God's palace. Those are the words that he uses. V'kol Dibur Ra, Harehu Baznei Hashem, and God is listening. So it's as if you're speaking right in front of the king. K'moshu Vayoto Yisrael ben Midbar, which is a theme which the Netziv used in the desert, which is why there was immediate responses when they sinned in the desert, because God, you're right there in this holy camp. He says every time you go to war, it's a holy camp, you're in God's palace. V'hosafnu la'el shom hasiba l'zeh mishum shu tarma achlot asirot v'heimer gormim litamtem nefesh ha-yisraeli v'kfar ishir ha-beila el alzeh. So it's real interesting. What he's saying is you're allowed to eat non-kosher food when you're at war. You know this? Any guys want a cheeseburger? Join the army, right? When you're at war, you don't have to look for the best hechsher. When you're at war, it's pikuach nefesh. You're at war, and there's food that you eat that food. But there's a spiritual teaching that non-kosher food causes timtum halev. You know what timtum halev is? Spiritual confusion. So the Netziv just now said, so you're going to eat the non-kosher food, which you're allowed to eat, but that's going to cause confusion. By the way, it's very interesting, because he just now pointed something out. You're allowed to eat non-kosher food. So the boundaries were just now broken. The boundaries are broken. You're allowed to eat the food. There may be spiritual repercussions of this. But by the way, I can argue on that. I can seriously argue on this. And I could ask the question, you know, if somebody, the classic case in rabbinic literature would be, what if a doctor comes and says, you have to eat a pork chop, right? I know it's not easy to get a doctor to write this kind of prescription today, but, and personally, I would ask the doctor to write me the prescription for a single malt, but I'm not sure which pharmacies fill that, but if the doctor says, you must eat this pork chop in order to live, so it's a mitzvah to eat it. We can even begin to discuss whether you should make a bracha or not for it, which is much, you say, well, it's really medication, but you enjoy it, but you're allowed to eat it. So if you eat something that you're allowed to eat, is it still non-kosher food? Because non-kosher food causes what we're told, said spiritually, causes confusion. But what causes the confusion? Is it the sin that causes the confusion, or is it the non-kosher food? So it's very easy to bait this point and say, no, if you're allowed to eat it, then there's no confusion. So then it went the other way over here. So I'm just pointing out that that was interesting. But again, it's still going back to this point of holiness. The Meshech Chachma, Source 16, he will say that be careful. Lo rechuk lo meshekavanat pasuk shelo legalot misterin shel melchama. We when we heard lashon hara or dibur ra, so most of us got real firm right then. We went back to school where they're telling you, right, especially in girls' schools, that's the right. There's only two topics, right? Tzniut and lashon hara. There's nothing else. Judaism doesn't really have any other interests, especially for women. So you heard Devarah's Lashon Hara. He says, no, you know what Devarah is? Talking about military plans. Loose lips, right? Talking about military plans could cause the enemy to overhear what your plans are, and that can cause a catastrophe. So it's really fascinating to me, because maybe you'll say this is selective, but three 19th century sources right away, they're looking at war in the most practical way. And we have some of the older sources are looking at war in, you know, in a very, very different way, maybe very, very practical, so that we can go back and think about what the 19th century did to us. We're skipping over... Let's see what we'll do as we... The Malbim, another, which is in source, which is another 19th century source, he also speaks about internal strife, is that if we're going to fight with one another, source 8, the Malbim also goes in that direction. We are going to skip Rabbeinu Bachaye in number 9, even though we really, really like it. He points out, V'nishmartim b'kol devara. You know what? Look in the middle. Look 4 lines from the bottom of 4 lines from the bottom of page 2. The odor shub mesechet avodah zarah v'nishmarti mikol devara shelo yeharher adam bayom v'yavol lidei tumah b'layla. Don't have thoughts which are perhaps erotic thoughts during the day, because that can lead to other types of activity at night. And that's why guard mi devara in one verse, the next verse says that if a person has this nocturnal emission. Mikan amar Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair. From here, Pinchas ben Yair said, meaning this is the source for a very famous teaching. Zihirut, by the way, remember before I told you to pay attention to the word zihirut back in terms of the candle lighting and so on? Zihirut. Zrizut mivalidei nikiyut. Nikiyut mivalidei prishut. Prishut mivalidei letara. Tara mivalidei ktusha. Tusha mivalidei yirat chet. Yirat chet mivalidei anava. Anava mivalidei chasidut. Chasidut mivalidei ruach hakodesh. And so on and so forth. By the way, there are various versions to this. Those of you familiar with Mesilat Yesharim, this is the source of Mesilat Yesharim. But isn't it interesting? But what's the source of this? V'shamarti mikol devara, the verse that we started with, because if you guard yourself from things which are bad, you, right? Zihirut, zrizut. This will end up going in a process which will lead you, by the way, leads to Ruach HaKodesh. It brings to Mashiach. That's really where all this goes. So it's interesting, because what did Rabbeinu Bachaye do? He simply reminded us, oh, take a look at that Gemara. We're now going to skip to source 13. 13 is the Panim Yafot. Panim Yafot means?
Pretty face.
Pretty face, okay. Panim Yafot is Rav Pinchas Horowitz, who was a chassid in Frankfurt, which itself is bizarre, and he was a teacher of the Chatam Sofer. Kitetze machane aleivecha, kfar katavnu rabbe mekomot, ki kol milchama hu lotzi, mehem nitzotzot haktusha, that's a fascinating line here. It's also used in terms of the Eshet Yifator discussion earlier, that going to war, there's actually two sides to the coin. Totally spiritual comment. You could behave like the enemy, spiritually, sin like the enemy, or you can find the holiness in the enemy. The purpose of war is to extract the holiness from the other side. That's what he says. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh sees that as the rationale behind Eshif HaTor. You see a beautiful woman, he writes a beautiful soul. You see there's a holy soul which has been captured by the other side, you got to bring that soul back home. That's what the Or HaChaim writes. Continuing over here, he writes, V'tzarech lizaher shelo yeh lehem siyua. We're going to skip a little bit. A person shouldn't think about bad. And we've already seen this a couple of times already, that it goes back to the realm of thoughts. We're skipping a little bit. He's going to tell us about the Amr Isibar Yehuda Alze Yidvu Kol Advurim the Kavanat Rabbi Yekiva Hu Mishanit Kavain. Now here is an observation. I have no question in my mind. Occasionally, I'll read a commentary, and I'll say to myself, "Look at that. It's Elul. He's reading the same parsha we are, and he's preparing his Shabbos Shuvah drasha. No question in my mind about this, but let's continue. He quoted a Gemara about Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to explain it right now. He says, what happens if you want to eat something not kosher? You want to eat chazir, pork. But you ended up getting a lamb chop. You thought it was a pork chop. Your kavana was, hinni muchan mzuman, I want to eat a pork chop. And what ended up happening? You got stuck with a lamb chop. So what happened? God protected you from sinning. By the way, see, our world is divided between the world of thought and the world of action. What was the case he just now gave us? The world of thought was a sin, but the world of action, you were protected from the sin. Vishuv pamacheret, but another time this happens, nitkaven l'chol basar taleh, but what happens if the next time you have in mind to eat a lamb chop, v'la biyado basar chazir, and a pork chop comes up in your hand, harei dehave kemezid. He says that's as if you did it on purpose. Hold it. What's the definition of purpose? What mezid? You have mezid on Shabbat. What's mezid? You did something on purpose. The world of thought and the world of action come together. So do you realize what he just now did to us? He said the world of thought and the world of action come together even though they were separated chronologically. When you wanted to sin, you couldn't sin. What you did want to sin, you did. You didn't want to sin, you did sin. So he says, guess what? God merged the two together. And he merged your intentions to sin together with your actions of sin. And all of you are saying, that's not fair. You can't do that, right? You can't do that. Like, what are you thinking? And what's God saying to us? Well, what are you thinking? Exactly. What are you thinking? You're saying to God, where's your mind at? And God is saying, yeah, okay. And where's your mind at? So let's continue this. Because this, I think, just got interesting. Hare dehave, now notice the kaf hadimyon, kimezid. He sinned both in his thoughts and in his mind, even though they went at the same time. God has compassion on us and does not completely merge together our thoughts with our actions. And David prayed to God. Listen, we make mistakes. I'm going to skip a little bit. Next line. Machshava sha'ose pri mitzarevet lema'ase shekatavnu sham sha'af sha'machshava lo hita biyachad im shkagata ma'ase kevin shehu goremet lema'ase ki inyin sha'amarnu lo yedam biyom az mitzarev hirhur shehu agorem lema'ase afo pi shehu onus. What is he saying here? He says, if your thoughts end up leading to actions, and you can say, but that action was an accident, I didn't do that on purpose. And he's saying, yeah, what? How in the world do you divorce your thoughts from the actions that happened afterwards? Which means he's saying is that in the world of sin, there's actions and thoughts, real accidents, or where no thoughts were involved whatsoever. But when thoughts were involved, so it's different, then it's completely different. But he'll go on to say that in terms of the world of tshuva, it's easier to do tshuva on such things, and really what you need to do is change the world of thoughts. You have to stop the thoughts, but once you do tshuva on the thoughts, then you've separated them from the actions, and then the actions become completely accidental. That's more or less the direction that he goes here, and I now need to explain what I think is the deeper level of what's going on over here. Yeah, go ahead. Okay, good. Okay, good. That's exactly where I'm going. I kept telling you from the beginning that the Yeshiva Torah is the issue here.
That's the elephant. She's the elephant.
By the way, how interesting is it when the Gemara speaks about Yeshiva Torah, it says the following. Yifat Torah, lo dibra Torah, ela keneged Yetzahara. The Torah over here is a response to the Yetzahara. Mutav sheyochlu Yisrael basar tmuot shchutot, va'al yochlu basar tmuot nevelot. It's better to eat food which is shechted and kosher than food which is in the nevela. Why in the world are they just going to the example of food? And what did it just now say? What it said is as follows. When you go out to war, you're going to have a total breakdown of morality. And you're going to have in mind to eat chazir. So what did God just now do? You don't get it yet.
Oh, he made it okay.
He made it kosher. He made the chazir kosher. No, that's exactly the point. He made it kosher. But what's the problem still? The problem is now the world of... Which means, in a sense, these two sections are playing off of one another. You're going to go to war, and you're going to sin. So what did God just now do? He just took away one sin. No, that's okay. By the way, just like the kosher, it's an extended metaphor of the exact same idea. When you go to war, you're allowed to eat something not kosher. Now go back to what the Nativ pointed out. But the non-kosher food is going to affect you. Okay, now maybe it's kosher, or is it not kosher? Am I allowed to eat it? I'm not allowed to. I am allowed to eat it. So did it affect me? Did it not affect me? So I go to war and I see this beautiful woman. How did our section here begin? Why are you looking at the beautiful woman? You're going to war. Focus. Focus. You're in a holy camp. Focus. The Shekhinah is in your camp. But what does God do? He made the non-kosher food kosher. I'm sorry for using that metaphor over here, but that's exactly what it's saying over here. It's not me. That's the Gemara said that. It's making it more holy because it just now took away a sin. But, what about the world of thought? What about the mind? What are you doing? Which means that's what this whole section is, if I'm not mistaken, is a response to that whole section. That whole section said, this is what's allowed. Doesn't mean because it's allowed, it's good for you. It doesn't mean that it's holy. I mean, again, just think of the way that we started over here. Create a holy camp. Guard yourself from all things that are wrong. Don't even look at a pnuya, a single woman who's attractive. Don't look at a married woman. But it just said that you're allowed to do these things. Yeah, and not only you're allowed to do it, so now it's kosher. But you're still trying. Your mind was not, oh, this is kosher, this is holy. Your mind is, I was trying to get the non-kosher food, and God stopped you from getting the non-kosher food by playing this religious trick on us by making it kosher. But by the way, theoretically, by making it kosher, it's not as attractive anymore. I'm sorry for saying that. By making it kosher, it's now not forbidden fruit anymore. If it's not forbidden, going back to your Garden of Eden, it's not forbidden fruit. So therefore, okay. Who cares? Yeah. Correct. And not only that, one of the commentaries who we skipped along the way said, even when it comes to killing, you're allowed to take a life. Make sure you don't kill an innocent person. Make sure there's no collateral damage. Make sure that there's intention and action merged together, because now the stakes are actually higher than most areas of our life. Now we really have to be careful that there's a merge between thoughts and action. But it's interesting. What did God do? God said, okay, you're going to have this moral breakdown. I'm going to make this thing allowed. But don't think that it's holy. I mean, that's what's interesting. It's not
still
holy.
Will be with Malay,
exactly. And now you understand that's what the Nitziv either was or not hinting at. It's still going to cause spiritual confusion. Look, we're warned. I'm going back to the beginning of the parasha. We're warned if you go out to war and you bring home somebody. Isn't the whole thing fascinating? She has to mourn for her parents, which Rashi, the Gemara, says. She has to mourn for her idolatry, her other belief system. You're bringing somebody who's an idol worshiper into your house. Okay, so how's that going to work out? By the way, and what do you tell your wife when you come home from war? Guess what? And that's exactly what the Torah says, that there is a series of events, one follows the other, to finally bring a child into the world who's going to be the child of a very, very dysfunctional family. And by the way, what about this child? What are we told? Oh, this child may have poor impulse control. I wonder where that came from, right? Does his father indicate real good impulse control? So I'm saying, hold it. And it's exactly the way that you phrased it. What exactly is holiness? Holiness is when we're able to merge together our thoughts and our actions. And a war may be more necessary than any other time to be able to do that. But of course, you know, when we saw the Horovitz in the Panim Yafot, he did take this into the world of tshuva as well. Well, as we're getting to Elul, as we're getting close to Rosh Hashanah, and how many things have we, our thoughts are in the wrong direction. Maybe the actions haven't gotten there yet. But once the thoughts go there, that's when we begin to suffer from spiritual problems. And therefore, when your thoughts go into one place, and then the opportunity arises, and then you do, oh, that was an accident. So what did he say? Yeah, well, God puts those things together. And that's why shogeg is so bad. And that's exactly what this was saying. When you think about something during the day, then guess what's happened during the night? And say, wow, I don't know where that came from. Well, you know exactly where that. There was a connection between the thoughts and the action. And therefore, what we need to do in terms of tshuva is we need, certainly in terms of actions, we need to change our actions, but also in terms of the world of thought. What's interesting about this is that God changed the actions. God turned the action to an action which is kosher, which doesn't mean that the thoughts were kosher either. I mean, that's what's interesting. God turned the action into kosher, doesn't mean the thoughts were kosher, so now I can say, well, I did something good, and God's saying, yeah, I took away the sin from this, but it doesn't mean that there's holiness involved in this. And this whole section says, you know how to prepare for war? Preparing for war means be holy people. Why be holy people? Because ultimately, when Jews go to war, what we have to go to war about is we're going to war. Well, you know, why is the Israeli army a holy? We'll end on this. I know that there are people, I'm going to say this again, and you can ignore everything I'm about to say. I know that there are people who say that going to the army is the most terrible thing, and they're Rosh Yeshivas and Yeshivas that are protesting against war. Here's my challenge to them. If you went over to them, these same Rosh Yeshiva, and say, I'm a soldier in the Israeli army, and after they spit and whatever, and you say, am I allowed to break Shabbat in order to protect you and the rest of the people here? Or is it usher because it's in the army? So what will they say? Oh, why? Because it's pikuach nefesh. So how in the world was that pikuach nefesh in order to save all those lives, but we can't do it? No. The people that are serving the army are doing a mitzvah. So now, the people serving the army need to be holy. Before, our two oldest sons joined the army 3 days, which my wife thought was terrible. I thought was very effective because you don't not sleep twice, right? So they were both in combat units at the exact same time. One in combat engineering, the guys who go into the tunnels and blow them up. And the other one in paratroopers, the one that's come from the sky and land then over there. And I told them and a whole bunch of their friends who were going in, I spoke to all of them, I said to them, listen, you're about to do something which is unbelievable, which means over the next couple of years, every single thing you do is going to be a mitzvah. Every push-up, every time you guard at night, every single time you run, and every aimless thing that you think you're doing is preparing you to protect Jewish people. Every single thing that you do is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Avtarech Kamocha, at least. And there's many other mitzvah that you're doing as well. This is just an unbelievable opportunity. But you need to merge thought and action. You need to have the thought of holiness. And as I told you from that story before, to call from Lebanon and ask, you know, do I leave money for the water that we took? These kids aren't living lives of holiness. God should protect all of them.